Track 13, Resistant Clients. On the last track, we discussed four aspects of a self-mutilator's ability to form relationships, which included a lack of workable medium for relationships, the factor of low self-esteem, keeping friends at distance, and the result of shame from past abuse. On this track, we will examine the various methods by which self-mutilators avoid discussion in therapy. We will talk about the blank slate, deflecting, and a false self. As you know, self-mutilators are extremely reluctant to discuss their issues when they are first introduced to the therapy setting. This is what is known as the blank slate. Lynn, age 15, had come to the United States from Hong Kong with her father, who divorced and married another woman only a few months after arriving in the United States. Lynn's mother was left in Hong Kong and was never sent for. Understandably, Lynn resented this new woman in her life and was soon referred to me after fainting in the hall at school. The nurse reported seeing bruises on her hands. When Lynn first came to me, she sat silent and angry for several minutes. I asked her short questions to try and express to her what I understood her feelings to be. I said, "You look unhappy." When she looked away, I said, "You don't want me to see your unhappiness?" She then looked down at the Chinese English dictionary in her lap. I then said, "You want the book to talk to me about you?" She slammed the book down. I said, "You're mad at the book." She finally said, "I'm mad at me. Myself is no good." By breaking the silence, I had established a means to open communication. Lynn soon related to me that her stepmother and father hit her hands, but she had also inflicted beatings on herself as punishment. Her eventual recovery could not have been possible had not those first moments passed in silence and overcome by brief questions and observations. Now that we've looked at the blank slate and the use of silence, another mode that self-mutilators use in therapy to avoid talking about their problems is known as deflecting. I'm sure you're familiar with this one. This occurs when clients continually change subject to assure that the discussion never comes back to them. If they don't acknowledge their problem, it won't exist anymore in their minds. 14-year-old Carrie was referred to me after she had been hospitalized for making a severe cut at her elbow joint, which severed her tendon. The following conversation demonstrated Carrie's ability to divert the topic of conversation to anything but herself. "I want you to tell me about the bad feelings you have," Carrie replied. "I feel all right now," I stated. "You don't always feel all right. When you don't, what do you think about?" Carrie replied, "I don't know." I ask, "Well, what about when you get angry? Were you angry when you hurt yourself?" She replied, "I don't get angry at anybody. I don't attack anybody." I replied, "You attack yourself, so I know you get angry at yourself." She replied, "That's not the same. That's not real anger. Real anger has to include someone else." As you can see, Carrie skillfully skirted around my direct questions about her to pick at nuances in the discussion. Her deflecting tactic was her way of keeping the self-injury from surfacing and revealing itself to her, I feel. To make Carrie be more direct about herself, I became more direct in my questioning. I ask, "You aren't aware that you are angry at yourself? You don't want to be aware of that? Cutting yourself is like screaming out that you have painful feelings and angry feelings." Carrie's next statement was, "I must be a bad person." I assured her that she was not a bad person, but that she did have complicated feelings, and I told her that I would help her to interpret these feelings. Carrie soon became more involved in the sessions and actually became one of my most talkative clients. 13-year-old Christy exhibited another form of avoidant tactic known as the false self. This is the method in which the self-mutilator talks a great deal but says nothing of value. Christy was referred to me after being caught burning herself on a radiator in the girls' bathroom. During her first session, Christy talked lively for 20 minutes about the various feelings she had experienced during the day. "Is that what you wanted to feel? Nothing?" She replied, "Yeah, it was like I was feeling everything up to that point, but when I burned myself, it didn't hurt. I thought everything else went away." By being direct and not allowing Christy any way to put up a false self to distract me, I was able to help her to increase her awareness of her feelings at the time of the burning. As you are aware, therapists are told to avoid reaching in to their clients and taking an active role in their healing. This philosophy stems from the idea that becoming too involved with a client, the client will be unable to heal themselves. While this idea is valid, as indicated earlier in this course, I believe that current familial structures of many of my clients, such as a single-parent home or an abusive one, and the lack of much-needed support systems, necessitates a more supportive and active role on my part, while still letting the client have as much free rein in their healing as appropriate. In the early stages of therapy that we have discussed on this track, I find that taking a more authoritative position allows the client to be more trusting of me. Because many clients come into therapy barely trusting themselves, the image of a strong leader to guide them is comforting and leads them to a more positive view of healing. However, the same caution must be taken that a client must become totally dependent on themselves by the time recovery has come around. Without this, the self-mutilating client is more likely to regress back into their self-destructive behavior. Do you agree? On this track, we discussed three methods by which self-mutilators avoid discussion in therapy: the blank slate, deflecting, and a false self. With the blank slate or unresponsive client, I used short statements. With the deflecting or evasive client and the client exhibiting this false self, I used direct, focused questions. On the next track, we will examine five different challenges teen self-mutilators face when going through the final stages of recovery. Those stages are self-blame, the fear of incomplete analysis, the danger of overanalysis, explaining scars to peers, and regret. Question 13. What are the three methods self-mutilators can use to avoid discussion in therapy?